when they come into a service, we have an advantage. We can hear the music. We can hear all of these things, and I appreciate each time that they come. I know it's an extra effort, and I appreciate that. I appreciate those that help us by interpreting. My mic? All right. I did something wrong. I can't get it off. Now it's stuck. All right. Let's see what we did wrong. I switched it. Is it good now? Perfect. All right. You know, there should be a college seminary course on how to turn on a microphone. But believe it or not, they don't have that. And every time, it's different. So we're good. All right. But I remember preaching in Pennsylvania. There was a deaf ministry there, a bunch of deaf people. And I was preaching on the conversion of Saul of Tarsus to Paul. And I was talking about him being zealous. All right, that word, zealous. And I'm preaching away, all of a sudden I hear, I looked over, what is going on? You know, normally I don't hear noise from the guy doing the deaf thing. And so I'm preaching, thinking, what word did I use? And I'm reading through the verses, and I preach every now and then. He just goes, what is going on? Well, I figured out it's the word zealous. And so that's about the only sign language that I know is zealous and I love you, all right? So that's kind of the extent of it for me. But I appreciate those that help us because I don't know a lot of those things. So I got to learn some of those things. But no, it is a blessing to be here. I am zealous about being here tonight, all right? So there we go. Stop by the table, if you would, and get a prayer card. I can almost guarantee the one you have is out of date. With the way our family continues to grow and grow and grow, and these ones won't be they won't be relative very long. We're expecting a little one in January, and so we are all of the girls, I think. All of the girls are in agreement that they'd like to have another little brother. It's kind of a novelty to have a boy in the house, so I think they want a second one. But no, we are looking forward to it. But encourage you to stop and take one of these and pray. It may become cliche or old hat to hear somebody say, pray for us. But truly, your missionaries rely on the prayers of God's people. We want to say thank you, a special thank you to your church for that C-lift box you put together last year. Pastor said, you know, we put together a little C-lift. And that just kind of rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? Put together a little C-lift. And we truly understand how much work was involved in that and appreciate that. It made it there. It made it safely. Did you guys get the video we sent? Okay. It got unpacked safely and everything was hidden in there. We kind of found all kinds of stuff in there that was good. And so we appreciate the generosity, the thoughtfulness there. I will share an interesting story about that. The sheet of plywood that was in the back that had everybody's signatures on it, some of you may have signed that yourself. When we were remodeling the house that we bought, I built a shelf in the girls' room to use up some storage space, and I took that piece of half-inch plywood and stuck it on that shelf, and so we can look up underneath and see all the names of the people from New Testament and be reminded of your generosity there. In time, it might get covered with drywall, but I haven't had time to do that yet, so we're enjoying that for right now. The screws got reused. Everything gets reused, all right? The pallet got cut up and burnt for firewood, so we use it all, but no, it is a blessing. We appreciate you folks and your generosity. Pastor, you would understand, sometimes you get asked to speak and God lays a message on your heart, but you have no clue why he lays it on your heart. And tonight would be that same situation. 1 Kings chapter number 18 is a very familiar story to many of us. It deals with Elijah on Mount Carmel and the challenge there between the prophets of Baal and Elijah there, following God's leading, God's directing in his life. And truly, I think the things that we can share tonight are of the Lord and just an encouragement to you. You've just come through an amazing week. And Elijah, can you imagine being Elijah? God tells you to go tell the prime minister, it's not going to rain until I say so. So you head over to Ottawa, you walk into Parliament and say, I have a question, can I speak to the Prime Minister? They say, sure. And they just let you right in. You say, Mr. Trudeau, it's not going to rain until I say. Who would do that? That doesn't make any sense. Who are you? You're just somebody from Hamilton, right? Why do I have to listen to you? And you just turn and walk out the door. People would kind of scratch your head and say, that was kind of weird. And a week goes by and there's no rain. Forecast for the next 10 days is all sun. 2 weeks, 3 weeks. A month goes by, there's no rain. And people start thinking, that's kind of interesting. Hasn't rained in a while. The grass is getting a little dry. 2 months, 3 months, 4 months go by. No rain. Would that have a bearing on our agriculture? And all of a sudden people start thinking, do you remember that one day where there was a guy who came in and he said it wasn't going to rain? Who was that guy? 6 months, a year, no rain. I would begin looking for him. Mister, when's it going to rain again? 2 years. And the span of time goes by. The crops are devastated. And Elijah comes to this point in Israel there where things were not going well at all. If you remember, those who were in control of Israel at that time was Ahab and Jezebel. And as I've done some research on that family, I mean, we all know, I actually have met one person who was named Jezebel in my entire life. It's not a name that we use very often. I mean, we've had 5 girls, but we aren't quite run out of girl names yet to have to use that one. And we don't really use that name today, do we? It has kind of a bad connotation in our minds. But this lady, if you study it out, she came from a bad line and she was worse. A wicked, wicked woman. We don't have the time to go into it all tonight, but her daughter was Athaliah, and Athaliah got even worse there. At 7 years old, Joash was set up as king. At his coronation, Athaliah comes into the temple, cries treason, and she goes out of the temple, and the guards are there, and they basically kill her. And just a messed up family. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, just on the other side of the lake, so I call it Southern Ontario, all right? So that was, we're just on the other side of the lake, and we could see across on a good day sometimes from Put-in Bay or South Bass Island, somewhere in there, and we could see over to Canada. And I grew up in Cleveland, and in the inner city of Cleveland is where our bus route ran. And so I would go in there, and we would find some people that had some interesting family background sometimes. And I don't have time to tell stories tonight about all those things, but we would meet sometimes families that would really make you scratch your head. And this family was way out there. And Ahab and Jezebel here threaten Elijah. And 1 Kings chapter number 18, verse 2, the Bible says, "And it came to pass after many days that the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year, saying, go show thyself unto Ahab, and I will send rain upon the earth. And Elijah went to show himself unto Ahab, and there was a sore famine in Samaria." There was a sore famine in Samaria. Jump down to verse number 17. "It came to pass when Ahab saw Elijah, that Ahab said unto him, art thou he that troubleth Israel? Aren't you the guy that's causing all of this problem?" Imagine that God has called you to go to Parliament and tell the Prime Minister that it wasn't going to rain. And you walk back in 3 years later, because God's told you to go back, and the Prime Minister says, "I've been looking for you. You're the one that's destroyed the whole country." What did Elijah say, verse 18? "And he answered, I have not troubled Israel, but thou and thy father's house, in that ye have forsaken the commandments of the Lord, and thou hast followed Balaam." Not only are you called to go back and face this, but the prime minister, the leader of that land, says to you, "You're the one causing the problem." And God says, "Tell him he's the one causing the problem." I mean, this was the king. He had the authority to say, "Off with your head," and you were gone. But Elijah here stands up and he tells the king exactly what the Lord had said. Verse number 19. "Now therefore, send and gather to me all Israel unto Mount Carmel, and the prophets of Baal 450, and the prophets of the grove 400, which eat at Jezebel's table. And Ahab sent unto all the children of Israel, gathered them all. And we know the story. Verse 21, Elijah came unto all the people and said, how long halt ye between two opinions? If the Lord be God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. And the people answered him not a word. My friend, today in Christianity, we see many people right here halted between two opinions. If God is truly God, tonight we've heard amazing things that God's done. Has God done anything unique here in the last 7 days? Is God truly God today? Absolutely he is. If you look at Psalm chapter number 78, as parents, we have a responsibility to our children of how they view God, really. We're commanded there as parents to show them the praises of the Lord, his strength, and his wonderful works that he has done. And my job, my responsibility as a parent to my children is for them to see a God who is mighty, who is powerful. He's not, his strength hasn't diminished any. He's not on low battery. Doesn't have a little red bar on his battery icon. He has full strength today. The things that he's doing today, my goal as a parent is for them to see not their dad doing neat things, but to see God doing neat things in their dad's life. To see that the God of the Bible, they're seeing him working today. And we've seen him at work. But many people are halted between two opinions. And Elijah says, okay, we're going to have a contest. We're going to have a contest and see who the real God is. And we all are familiar with the story. The 450 go up and they put their bullock in order and they lay on the altar and they cut themselves. And if you really thought your God was going to send fire, would you get on top of that altar? Seriously. You're praying, false God, send fire right here where I'm sitting. Does that make any sense? They're cutting themselves. There's something that we see today in the north and all around us. All of these things, and nothing happens. Elijah tries to encourage them and say, well, maybe he's on vacation. Maybe he's just sleeping. And they continue all day, and at the time of the evening sacrifice, Elijah rebuilds the altar of God, lays the bullock in order, douses that thing with a bunch of water. Now, in Baffin Island, we don't have any trees. We're above the tree line. Not a single tree goes there. And so when we come back, every time we hug a tree, just because, make sure they're still around. All right? That's why Brother Hitz needs help with the wood stove. you say, well, then how is he going to burn wood? Ask me later. I'll explain it. It all makes sense. All right? But we don't have any trees. And so, but we do start fires. We have wood stoves that we use to supplement heat and things like that. And one thing I know about starting fires is you normally don't soak the thing before you start it. It makes it hard. But they totally soaked this altar. They soaked the sacrifice, filled the ditch around it. And Elijah begins to pray. Elijah wasn't standing on top of his altar when he was praying. I think he might have been praying, backing up. Now, Lord, send some fire. And backing up a little bit. Why? Because Elijah's God answered and sent that fire and consumed everything, showing that he had power. Now put yourself in Elijah's shoes. You have told this king that's not going to rain. You have told this king the problem is that you're solving a false god. You go up on top of this mountain. You watch them all day try to serve their false god and it doesn't work. And you pray and God sends fire and consumes the whole thing. Then you can write a good prayer letter. And isn't that where we're at? Who would not want to be Elijah standing on that mountain praying? Seeing those things. That would be amazing. But my friend, we have seen amazing things this week, haven't we? And spiritually, many times, we go through mountaintop experiences, don't we? But turn over one chapter to chapter number 19. Right at the back side of this mountaintop experience that Elijah faces. Verse number 1 of 19, and Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and wherewithal how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger unto Elijah, saying, so let the gods do to me and more also if I make not thy life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. Elijah just sees this mighty hand of God at work. And then he gets an email from Jezebel herself that says, my gods, I'm putting them on the line, which we already just saw them discredited. They do so to me, and more also, if I don't kill you by tomorrow. How would you like to open that in your inbox? You're rejoicing at what God has done, and then you get that kind of news. So Elijah says, doesn't bother me, I just saw God at work. Is that what he says? Look at verse number 3. And when he saw that, he arose and went for his life and came to Beersheba. Here is a guy who just called down fire from heaven, and now he's running for his life from a lady who's threatened him with persecution. Verse 4, but he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree, and he requested for himself that he might die and said, it is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am not better than my father's. Not a whole lot of time has elapsed here, has it? And he has gone from the mountaintop to the valley pretty quick, hasn't he? Says, Lord, take away my life. It's not worth it. Have we ever been there? We serve the Lord and we see him do a work and then a difficulty comes and we say, it's not worth it anymore. Is God just as much at work in the valleys as he is on the mountains? In the valley he restoreth my soul. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. God is with us even in those difficult times. And we are naive if we think that we're just going to always be living on the mountaintop. If I were thinking going to the Arctic that we're always going to live on the mountaintop, I would be foolish. Your missionaries going to Liberia, if they think it's going to be the mountaintop the whole time, that's not reality. Was it for Jesus? Was everyone always saying, oh, we are so glad he's here? Do a study of the life of Christ. I've been doing that recently, a little more detailed study of the life of Christ, and it's amazing, Pastor, how often the Pharisees pop up. And you can get kind of frustrated with them. They are always getting in the way. They resisted him. And many times, folks, people will resist us as well, but Elijah says, it's enough. He is depressed. He laid down. Verse 5, and as he lay and slept under a juniper tree, behold, then an angel touched him and said unto him, arise and eat. And he looked, and behold, there was a cake, bacon on the coals, and a cruse of water at his head, and he did eat and drink and lay down again. This is how we know Elijah was a Baptist, all right? He was taking a nap, an angel woke him up and said, eat something. He ate something and took another nap, all right? So it had to be a Sunday. All right? I'm just joking there. But Elijah here, he's depressed. He lays down under this tree. All of a sudden, an angel comes and smacks him on the side and says, hey, you need to eat something. Oh, and miraculously, here's a meal prepared for you in the middle of the wilderness. Elijah eats it, lays back down, goes to sleep. Verse 7, and the angel of the Lord came again the second time and touched him and said, arise and eat, because the journey is too great for thee. My friend, God's called our family to go to the Arctic. Not a whole lot of people volunteering to go. We wish more would come. That's a journey that God has put our family on, a course he's put our family on. And can I say to you, that is too great for us, for me humanly to handle? If I had to go there in my own strength, the novelty of 40 below wears off fast. When you get up to go to church and the wind chills are around 70 below, it's hitting minus 50, minus 55, and you go out and you have a flat tire. That's kind of depressing. I don't like changing tires at zero, let alone at 55 below. And so I remember one winter morning, this past winter, going out and seeing that, thinking, oh no. I mean, it was completely flat on the bottom. So what do? You get your jack out. Did you know hydraulic oil doesn't work real well at 55 below either? And so you convince your jack to start lifting your car, all right? And got that jacked up and took the tire off and put the spare tire on. And I set the original tire that was flat in my shop on the flat side and stood right up. Put the spare tire on, convinced the truck to start that morning, and we got to church. Yes, we still have church at 55 below. You don't have anything else to do, right? So you might as well go to church where it's warm. And so we started the truck and we went to church. Monday morning, I went out and said, I got to figure out what's wrong with that tire. And I walked in my shop and the tire's laying over on its side, fully inflated. Now that's kind of weird. How'd that happen? Well, the temperature had come up to about minus 35, minus 40, which had expanded the air in the tire just enough to blow it back up again. But nothing wrong with the tire. It just got so cold that the air got so condensed that the tire went flat. If I would have known that, I would have just added air to the tire. But what's my point? It can lose its appeal very quickly. But God's called us on a journey, and he knows that personally that journey is too much for me. But that's why he says, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in spirit, and you will find rest unto your souls. How can we take a yoke on us and find rest? That doesn't make sense. But my friend, he says, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. If you picture two head of cattle trying to go opposite directions in a yoke, they're going to have some sore necks at the end of the day, aren't they? But if they pull together, what a blessing that is. And Christ literally is saying, come alongside of me. Enter my yoke. Follow the path I have for you and find rest. Yes, it might go through some difficult. Yes, there might be some plowing to do, but you'll find rest. The first 2 years that we were in the Arctic, we planted seed after seed after seed after seed after seed. And to be honest with you, didn't see a whole lot of fruit. But we're faithful in planting. Since November, we have literally, Emily and I have said multiple times, we have been able to mark time since November. Lord allowed us to finish that building, put the sign on it, have a grand opening where we got into the community, got some information out about the church starting up in an official place, and God has been blessing. We have seen people come. Probably since November, we've had 30 to 35 first-time adult visitors come. In a town of 7,000, that's pretty big, and we are encouraged. It's a transient town, so we do have people coming in and out, but God is working. It was a hard time to leave. We've had people making good decisions, people learning and growing, but it took 2 years of not really seeing things to get there. It took 2 years of, Lord, is this really what you want? Are we really in the right spot? He said, yep, just stick at it. My yoke is easy, my burden is light. The angel touches him the second time and says, arise and eat. The journey is too great for thee. And he arose and did eat and drink, and went in the strength of that meat 40 days and 40 nights unto Horeb, the mount of God. Now, I got to find me some food like that. Isaac's going to grow up. He already eats quite a bit. But if I can find a meal that fills that boy up for 40 days and 40 nights, I am going to subscribe to that club or something, all right? But that is some amazing food, and we know that it's a supernatural thing that God did for Elijah. So Elijah goes. Verse number 9, he came thither unto a cave and lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came unto him and said, "What doest thou here, Elijah? Elijah, what are you doing here? This isn't what I've called you to." Elijah begins to explain. He says, "I have been very jealous for the Lord of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thy altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword. And I, even I, am left, and they seek my life to take it away." He's saying, "Lord, I've been serving you, and I'm the only one left." Do you ever feel that way? When you feel that way, that's a good time to come back to church and see others that are serving the Lord together. And what does God say? Verse number 11, he said, "Go forth and stand upon the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind rent the mountains, break in pieces the rocks before the Lord." The Lord was not in the wind. "And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still small voice." We're familiar with this passage. I know what it is to stand in a strong wind. We get those blizzards, and occasionally, this past year, there were two different occasions where the house that we had bought, somebody didn't screw the metal roofing down quite so well. And so you're sitting there, and the blizzard's starting to pick up, and of course it's dark because it's wintertime, it's mostly dark, and you hear this noise. That's not a real comforting sound. And so I was tempted to ask my wife, "Would you like to go up there and screw it down?" But she wasn't really, I knew what the answer would be, so I said, "Well, I'll go do it." There you go, out in the dark, in the blizzard, in the wind, up on the roof, a metal roof. And you pray, and everybody inside's praying. And you're in that wind, and you're up on the roof, and the second time, it was pretty windy that night, and it's 40 below, 50 below. You're working with your drill and your gloves, and it's just a mess. But up on the roof, and I remember sitting there praying before it started, and you could feel the whole house moving. And I remember thinking, "Lord, this is some pretty amazing wind. But you told Elijah, you showed him your strength even in the wind. We didn't have rocks breaking behind us. But Elijah saw this. He saw an earthquake. He saw a fire. The Lord wasn't in any of those things at that time. And then he heard a still, small voice." And look at his reaction as we close. Verse number 13. "And it was so, when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood in the entering of the cave. And behold, there came a voice unto him and said, 'What doest thou here, Elijah?' And he said, 'I have been very jealous for the Lord of hosts, because the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thy altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away.' And the Lord said unto him, 'Go, return on thy way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when thou cometh, anoint Hazael to be king over Syria.'" Go down to verse 18. "Yet I have left me 7,000 in Israel, all the knees of which have not bowed unto Baal, and every mouth which has not kissed him." My friend, as we look at Elijah here, Elijah had had two encounters with an angel. Do you realize that? He got woke up by an angel twice and fed. He had seen God's hand firsthand through the fire that came and consumed that altar, through the wind, through the earthquake, through the fire again. He had seen all of those miraculous things. But they did not compare to God's personal presence and his direction. Elijah wasn't looking for a handwriting on the wall. Elijah knew when that still, small voice came, that was all he needed. God said, "Elijah, I have a job for you." Christian, here tonight, God has a job for you. It's not mine to tell you what it is. To many of you, to me, are strangers. I don't know you very well. I've only been here a couple of times. But if God didn't have a plan for your life, He should have just taken you to heaven when you got saved. But he's left you here for a reason. He's left my family here for a reason. Why? To go be popsicles in the north. Why would he send somebody that far away? Did we do something wrong? Do you remember the account of the blind man? His disciples asked Jesus, Jesus, which person sinned, the man or his parents, that he was born blind? What was Jesus' reply? Neither, but that God might be glorified. God has left you here to glorify himself in and through your life. Romans 12 teaches us to present our bodies a living sacrifice. The Bible talks about us being the sheep of, and he being the good shepherd. But can I remind you that the sheep of the Old Testament were heading for the altar? You say, well, I don't want to lay down my life. Christ laid down his life for us. Can we give of our life to him? Absolutely. I don't know what God has for you. I know what he has for me, and that's my responsibility to know, find it out, and do it. But let me encourage you tonight. Perhaps you're on a mountaintop, just coming off of this week of wonderful things that God has done. Perhaps you're in a valley. I don't know where you're at tonight. But God will speak to you through his still small voice, his word and his spirit, if you say, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? I'm praying that for some people that is to come to the north. We need helpers. But you know they need people right here in Hamilton sharing the gospel too. Somebody needs to follow up on those people that were reached last week. Lord, would you have me do that? Will you be yielded to his still small voice in your life tonight? Heavenly Father, we thank you that you do lead us. Lord, it's not led with a large billboard. It's not led through an email that's going to show up in our inbox. But Lord, you lead through your word and through your Holy Spirit, still small voice in our life. Lord, I pray for each of your children here tonight that we would take inventory of our own life and say, Lord, what is it that I'm supposed to be doing? Not the person sitting in the row behind me or the person in the chair next to me. But Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? Lord, if each of us are serving you as we should, then the body will be fitly joined together and able to accomplish that which you have. Lord, I pray that you would help convey to the hearts of those here our thankfulness for the part that they've had in the ministry there on Baffin Island, and their encouragement to us, their holding up the arms of the ministry there, their support. Lord, would you encourage and bless them for that? And would you lead and direct them? Lord, I pray if there be a young one here, or even an older one, who senses you leading them, whether it be across the world or across the street, Lord, that you would make that calling clear in their minds and use them in a mighty way. Your heads are bowed and your eyes are closed, and we ask Pastor to come and finish the service as he would see fit.